Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Really, WSM. Welcome, everybody, to the Really 007 podcast. I'm Tom Pickup. And we're here for this exclusive interview with Mr. Ian Pirrie. And he played Mr. Krug, or sometimes known as Creep, in Dine of the Day. Could be both, but we will get onto that. But yes, if you're new to us, you can see all our interviews on YouTube with other actors from the Bond films and behind-the-scenes people too, such as directors and editors. And you can listen to all our episodes, not just interviews, reviews and things like that, on iTunes and Spotify. We're on social media, so we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can find daily interaction between Bond fans all over the world. Even South Africa, I believe, in. Yeah, so that's it. Anyway, so I'm Tom. With me today is John, who's a regular contributor. And he's a huge fan of the Pierce Brosnan Bond films in particular. It's the Bond we grew up with. We were a bit younger then, as we all were. But yeah, he's the Bond that we grew up with on the big screen, on the cinema, essentially. So, yes. So, Ian has been acting for many, many years, and he's played a huge variety of parts. He's been in many films, TV programs, series, and lots of work on the theatre. I'm looking forward to talking about that as well. He's worked alongside some of the biggest names, as well as fellow Bond actors, I believe. Some of the directors he's worked with are amazing. So he's worked with Martin Scorsese, Ridley Scott, and Christopher Nolan, amongst others. So a very rich CV indeed from Ian.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll go into some of those films that he has been in, such as the latest Matrix film, I believe, Gangs of New York, The Dark Knight, and Les Miserables as well, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that. But as we say, we Bond fans know him best as Mr. Krug or Creep in Dine of the Day. Welcome in anyway. So where are you talking to us from this afternoon?
At the moment, I'm talking from a place in Pembrokeshire coast called Tenby. I have a wee holiday home here. My wife's from Barry originally. So we bought a place here about 9, 10 years ago, and we got in early. We've actually got a couple of places here, and everybody knows us, and we come down, you know, as much as we can, mostly in the winter, you know, because we rent it out in the summer. And the winter's better here in Tenby because it's a very busy place in the summer. It's three gorgeous beaches. It was voted the top 10 place in the world, one of the top 10 places in the world for its beaches and its walks. I'd still say Scotland was up there, but never mind. Yeah, I love it down here. I came down here as a kid, my parents and Vicky, my wife, used to come here all the time. So that's what we're doing here at the moment. We're just down here chilling, doing a little bit of work in the cottages before I go up to Scotland for a wedding in a week's time in St Andrews, which will be lovely. But my dad lives up in Aberdeen, so I'm popping up to see him on Thursday, I think. So, yeah.
Lovely. Well, I'm Tenby, actually. We used to go on school trips to Saundersfoot. Is that quite near?
Oh, Saundersfoot, yeah, it's just 2 miles away.
Yeah, beautiful place. Yeah, I'd recommend it. As is St. Andrews, of course, as well. Dear me.
Yeah.
Some top places. So, yeah, you obviously you're Scottish. So just tell us about your upbringing and how you got into the world of acting.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I was I never trained as an actor at all. I was a welder. I was a bouncer. I did a variety of jobs, really. Computer operator. At one point, I sold Pretty Polly tights. I was a tight salesman, which was a great job. It was fantastic, actually. There's nothing I don't know about denier, tight denier, you know. So up until the age of 29, I was just doing normal jobs, wasn't really happy. My old man was a blacksmith, get a trade behind you. So I was a welder for 7 years, hated it. I could sing a bit. I did some amateur dramatics up there. I was part of a couple of local amateur dramatics groups, which I joined when I was like 19. I was a bouncer on the door, and this girl come up and says, "You've got a really nice personality, and maybe you should, you know, can you sing?" I says, "I don't know." And they were doing a musical, and I went to see it, and I got hooked. I thought it was great. I knew I could sing a little bit, but I'd only kind of been singing, you know, around the Christmas fire with parents and stuff. And went in there, got the lead in the show, did a few shows with them. And someone had said to me, "I think you've got a good enough voice to audition for, you know, to go down to London and audition for some of the musicals." So at 29, I went down to London and auditioned for a couple of shows, got really close to getting into them, knocked on some agent's door and said, "Look, there's a guy thinks I'm quite a good singer. His name's David Grindrod, who worked for Andrew Lloyd Webber, who'd seen me auditioning for Starlet Express." Little did I know it was for the black part. It was the pauper. And it was, so he's always black. And I was kind of the wrong look. And but he says, "You've got a good voice, so you should maybe, if you can try and get yourself an agent." So I knocked on this agent's door in London called Jessica Carney and said, "Look, I was mini-cabbying in London." And I said, "I've got a pickup in half an hour." I said, "So if you can, you know, I'll work for you, you work for me." Didn't know it. I was totally green, wet behind the ears. And she says, "Who are you?" I says, "Oh, I'm Ian Perry, pleased to meet you." She says, "What have you done?" I said, "Nothing." I says, "I think I've got a good voice. And this guy, David Grindrod, I know David." He says, "Well, give him a call." I says, "But hurry up, because I've got to pick up 20 minutes now." She called David and he says, "He's got a cracking voice," and she just got a hunch and she took him on there and then. So he says, "You've got a really good look for TV and film. Have you done any TV and film?" I says, "No." And then 3 months later, I was in the original cast of Jesus Christ Superstar in the West End at the Lyceum Theatre. 3 months later, I was in the West End gig, which I did for a year. Then I went into Les Mis, did Valjean in Les Mis twice in the West End.
You come into that though. What are you thinking? If you've had no background, you're suddenly in the biggest production in, you know, the West.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a bit mad. I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar was. I mean, it was just like I didn't even know the music. I didn't know the music for any of them. I thought I'd heard Les Mis. When, of course, doing amateur dramatics, I'd heard Les Mis, the recording of it, and I remember sitting in this lady's house in Aberdeen, going, "Wow, that's magic. You know, that's really, really cool." And literally, I think a year later, I was in it, standing backstage, playing the lead role. I was understudying originally, the lead role, thinking, "Well, you've always wanted to do this, Perry. Come on, you know, you can do it." And going on there and just delivering, you know. And then I did Phantom. I met my wife and did Phantom in Town, which I was covering the Phantom. And then I did 3 seasons with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Did the Globe, worked with Judy Dench at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And it's mad. It's a mad journey, really. And I did a bits of telly. And while I was doing Les Mis, funnily enough, I think I'd just finished and a call came through. My agent says, "You never guess, Barbara Broccoli's on the phone. And do you want to audition for James Bond?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And you do. And just says, "Well, they want to see you tomorrow." This was the day before. "How's your South African accent?" And I'm like, "I don't know. That'll be all right." So I remember looking up Cry Freedom. John Thaw doing a South African accent. And well, that'll do. Walking in and doing the audition. Can't remember who it was that cast it now. But that was my first ever film audition. The second one was Guns of New York. And got it. Got both of them, you know. It's mad. That was my claim to fame. When both films were released, I remember walking to Leicester Square and Bond was at the Odeon and Guns of New York was next door at the Empire. I was like, and it's all went downhill from there. No, it's been great. But yeah, that was really mad, you know? And then, yeah, just the whole experience of doing Bonds being practically unlike any other job in lots of ways, you know. But I can't believe it's 20 years ago. You know? It's mad. It's mad. I was only 12 when I did it, of course. Yeah.
I've said so much there. I've just got to unpack a bit of that. So, first of all, how on earth did you get from the stage to Shakespeare? Because that's a completely different discipline, isn't it?
Well, I don't particularly look... I mean, I can't dance to save my life. I'm not really a musical theatre-looking guy, you know. I look like a bruiser or a builder or whatever, and there's not many roles, which not that my agent said, but I always thought to myself, you know, how much of a shelf life have I got? And I knew I could act a bit as well. And because I've got a good look for my wife's an actress as well, because I've got a good look for TV, I mean, you can't go to drama school and if you haven't got a good look, you might, you know, you can train for 4 years, but you need to look great in camera. You need to have, I always knew what my casting would be, heavies, dads, stoic dads, army, police. That was always going to be my casting. And thank God at the age of 14, I got lots of acne because it's kind of helped me in my face. I got a few pit marks in my face, which actually helps in my casting sometimes. I've got a beard now, but I can have a hard looking face sometimes, especially when I was younger and thinner. So my agent says, look, we'll do the music theatre for a while. And when they're not interested in you for that, maybe try and do a little bit of Shakespeare or straight theatre. And I say, oh, straight theatre would be great. And the first ever Shakespeare I did, actually, it wasn't at the RSC. I did Macbeth with Sean Bean.
And
this is a real great link. It's a great link for Bond because I did. It was Ed Hall was directing it, the son of Peter Hall and Rebecca Hall.
Yeah.
And the cast was Sean Bean, Julian Glover.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Who was the receptionist? What's her name?
Oh, Moneypenny.
Yeah.
Lois Maxwell.
Samantha Bond.
Oh, Samantha Bond, right.
Yeah. It was Sam Bond. So they were all in the cast of Macbeth. So that was kind of really strange. And I had just filmed it, and then I went to do Bond. And then there was a premiere, which was across from the Royal Albert Hall, was the premiere, the Bond premiere. Yeah. So they had a big, massive tent. And where they sent the Albert Memorial is, that was inside the premier tent, you know. And because it was a big affair, that Bond, I struggled, of course, to get an invite.
Yeah.
You know, I was just playing a wee part of the film. A bit gutted. And I ended up getting being escorted, you know, by one of the castmates. I got an invite through, I think, Sam Bond. Or Julian had a word, or Sean had a word, of course. It's the old
thing. Yeah, yeah.
It was like one of our cast members is in this. Sean says, I'm not even in the blooming film. Julian says, I'm not even in the film. Well, we're all invited to it. Eventually I got an invite to the gig, which was lovely.
That was the 40th anniversary as well.
It was the 40th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Even more special. So working on Macbeth then? So you must get to know those.
That was the funny thing with Macbeth, because I knew nothing about Shakespeare, nothing at all. And Ed Hall said, well, you sing, so you have a natural rhythm to the iambic pentameter as a rhythm to Shakespeare. He says, and that's all you need to know. If you're a singer, you'll naturally get the rhythm of Shakespeare, I think I'm all right at it, you know. And that was great. I mean, I was asked to cover Sean. I was asked to cover Macbeth because in my day, they weren't too dissimilar. I mean, I would come out literally the stage door at the time. People would ask for my autograph thinking I was Sean Bean. I says, mate, I says, I've got to tell you. I says, I come into the theatre at night before you and people are asking for your autograph thinking I'm you. And he was like, no, they think you're me. No. you would say, yeah. Yeah. Like, they do. He would, and he'd look at me like up and down, like thinking, you look like me. And I was like, it was apparently, you know. It was a really nice gig. He was brilliant, actually. He was brilliant. Especially, he just done Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He had a lot of sword expertise, you know. One night I really panicked because they had a massive sword fight on stage. Him and Macduff practically broke his thumb. And I was expected to go on, of course, and cover for him. Macbeth, and I was like, oh, no, please, no. Luckily, he's a bit of a trooper, and he came back. And I didn't have to go on, thankfully, because it would have been terrible, because I didn't really know it. Then he'll never go off. But that was a great gig. Julian was, who's a lovely guy, was, I mean, he would forget his lines sometimes, because he was a fair age then, Julian. I mean, he's probably about 170 now, Julian. he was a fair age then. But he would forget his lines and then just drift into another part of Shakespeare from some other play. And just, it would be so, and you wouldn't know.
No.
He would just drift into, you know, Twelfth Night or something. And then managed to get back to where he was supposed to be to give his cue. And it was a really lovely gig. Really lovely gig. It was a great cast and that. Good camaraderie. Sam Bourne was the equity dep. She was really on it. She was fantastic. Samantha is really, really, really great character. Yeah, lovely lady. I don't know if you've had any of these people on.
Not yet, unfortunately. We would love to have them on.
I've got a friend, Ross Anderson, whose dad has got a Bond museum up in Scotland.
Oh wow.
He's got a Bond museum. So, and that's his, Ross, it's his wedding that I'm going to.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
His dad, who's a lovely guy, has got loads of knickknacks for Bond films and memorabilia, and it's got some sort of little museum up in the Borders.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, I'm really interested. I remember I've still got some of it, because you used to get a goodie bag at the premiere. I've got a goodie bag, so I've got, like, the Bond, you know, the invisible car.
Oh, yeah, right.
Got the little box and everything it's in and stuff from the premiere. It says 40th anniversary and little bits and pieces, you know, from it. Great memories. It really was a lovely gig. If any actor out there has a chance to do a Bond gig, it's just amazing. Because the legacy of it, and you know, as a kid, everybody wants to be a Bond film. It was funny actually, because I went to the cast and crew screening of it with my son at the time, who was 9, and he was interested in Bond, and he says, "Can I take along my friend?" And his friend was interested in Bond as well, apparently. I think I had 4 or 5 scenes in the film originally or whatever. And I was quite chuffed with being part of Bond. Obviously, it was a big thing. The kid finished watching it, his mate, and turned and tapped me on the shoulder and went, "Is that it?" I went, "What? Is that you finished? Is that all you've got?" What? Yeah.
Yeah, but in fairness... Like,
you have no idea. You have no idea how big a deal this is. You know, James Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in fairness, like, your son is now, you know, that is like the greatest pickup line at a pub any time. Just say, you know, my dad's the guy you put a gun to someone's nuts in a Bond film and said you want to be Fidel Castrata, you know?
Mojito, por favor. Mr. Pooh, your admittance papers for the Alvarez Clinic tomorrow.
Bad bloody time, Fidel. Now round up some more girls and take them to room 42. Unless you want to be known as Fidel Castrata. Rapido, vamonos!
So we're going to the subject of the creep.
The creep, yeah.
I don't know why that's crept in, because it was always Mr. Krug, which I thought it was always Krug. My addition for it was Krug, and I thought that's kind of quite a nice name being, you know. African and the Krug, you know. Yeah. I remember getting to set and it had on the cast list, you know, and to come in for the day, Krug, the creep. What the hell's all this? What's this, the creep thing? He's just a bit of a creep, is he? Was that So it's really, it's just stuck. I think there was an Ardo name. He was never meant to be there, the creep. And now, in everything, they forget the word Krug. It's just the creep, you know? So, yeah, so it's kind of like, ooh. Whatever, you know. I've been called worse.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was just something that was a little bit of a, I think it was just like an add-on, you know. But a wonderful time, because we filmed that in Cadiz in Spain.
Yeah.
Mm.
And in the worst weather Cadiz had ever had.
Oh, wow.
Because we went there, and because, of course, it's American money, and the South Americans in Cuba wasn't wanting Bond to film in Cuba. It was the whole thing about going to a place that looked like Cuba, and apparently the coastline of Cadiz is very similar. But my scene that I did in the bar, literally, we had about an hour to film it. And this is at the end. I was there for 2 weeks waiting for the weather to get better.
Oh, wow.
And Lee Tamahone, the director, says, mate, you've got about two takes of this, because this cloud was coming over.
Oh, no.
And they built the bar in the sea. It was stilts on stilts and everything. And as soon as I finished filming it, about half an hour later, the whole thing was washed away.
Oh, wow.
In the sea. It was that tight, you know. Weather was horrendous. And I mean, even my biggest claim to fame is I was there watching her coming out of the water.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Oh. I was there. I mean, I think the director, he must have asked her to do it about...
Yeah.
10 times, you know.
Oh, right.
For some reason.
Yeah.
And we all just stood and watched. It was a terrible movie.
You said it was freezing, didn't she?
It was freezing. So, you know, it's... Anyway, I won't go there. But yeah, she was freezing as well. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Magnificent view.
It is, isn't it? Too bad it's lost on everybody else.
Mojito? You should try it.
Yeah, it was awful weather. It really was for filming. It was a couple of days when he was in the tower doing his stuff in the tower with a great Spanish actor. I can't remember his name. The guy that was in the tower with a beard.
Oh, yeah, Raul.
Oh, yeah. Emilio Echeverria or something like that.
My favorite Spanish actor, him, actually.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, that was really good stuff up there. It was all to do with the cigars, and I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only time they got decent weather. And they all shipped us out in a private jet from Luton, the whole cast and the whole crew from Luton. And the last person that got on the plane was Halle Berry. She made us all wait. She just won the Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember making a little bit of an entrance and getting away. Yeah. But yeah, it was great. I mean, because all my stuff, I mean, I have to say, he's the nicest guy. Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's so good to hear.
My friend, I've got a mate who's writes music for films quite well. Well, he's doing very, very well. And he's from Navan.
Oh, yeah.
Where Brosnan comes from.
Yeah.
Lady E's Wedding.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I remember the first day I arrived on set, actually, at Pinewood. We shot the interiors at Pinewood. I remember getting on set, and I got on and he was finishing a scene. The only time in my life I stood there looking at a man going, he's gorgeous. He's absolutely stunning. What a good looking. I mean, I not just good looking, unbelievably good looking.
Yeah.
You know? And he came off and he went, hey, Ian, how are you, Pierce? You know, how was that? I went, what? He went, how was that? It's great. You think it was good? I went, yeah. It's like, yeah. You're James Bond, you know? There's a really lovely way about him that he's just normal. He's just normal Irishman. He hasn't forgotten his roots. Treats everyone with real, you know, doesn't matter where you are in your career, he has time for you, he's time for the fans, I'm a big movie buff, and I remember speaking to him of lots and lots of things, you know, we're sitting around waiting, because it was three or four scenes I had with him. And I said to him once, I said, Long Good Friday, the Long Good Friday. I says, tell me about that. I says, because I always remember that ending when you turn round, you know.
Yeah.
He says, I'll tell you about that, he said. He said, I originally auditioned for the hitman in the film.
Oh, right.
And no, I originally auditioned for the driver. The driver. And I remember he says to me, he said, I can just imagine being the driver looking cool and this, that, and the way he was explaining it. It was a much bigger part. And he didn't get it, and he got the hitman. And the driver's cut from the whole movie. You just see the back of his head.
Yeah.
That moment when he turns round in the Long Good Friday at the end, when Hoskins is in the car,
yeah,
and the bus go down in the car, and that great music comes on, and he just looks at him with a gun, was the exact moment they were interested in him in James Bond.
Oh.
If he'd been the driver,
yeah,
they wouldn't have seen him. But they went, look at that guy. And he turns around and he's got the gun on Brosnan like that, on Hoskins. And that apparently that was the moment that they were interested in, you know, which is the way it works, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And he waited a long time, of course, until
because
he lost out on it. He told me that he was in L.A. and he saw his name on the poster in L.A. as James Bond.
Oh.
Then the Remington Steel came through and went, sorry, we're renewing your contract and to take everything down. So you had to wait like 4 years.
It was a long time, wasn't it? And I think it was always fate, wasn't it, that he had to be.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he loved it so much and he appreciated the role.
You know what? He could still do it now.
Of course he could.
Oh, could he? Yeah.
We'd have him back.
Maybe he's changed. He's still a great looking guy.
Oh, he is, isn't he? Yeah, he's brilliant.
He is. And actually, his career at the moment's on an absolute upward trajectory, isn't he? It's really, you know, he's just done Black Adam and he's really in the Hollywood thrillers at the moment.
He's always lacking in confidence a little bit, believe it or not, because he didn't think the press, I don't think, took him that seriously as an actor.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And he did a great film with Catherine McCormack after all the Bond had finished, called The Tailor of Panama. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Super.
Kind of like the dark version, the anti-Bond almost, you know. And he plays this great character in that film, and his acting chops, kind of, you can really see it then, you know. Mm. He's fantastic. He just holds a camera, you know. I had the greatest times there, the greatest memories, you know, having a laugh with him. Because that was two weeks I was in Cadiz. I spent like a week or so in Pinewood. And of course, nothing then was really, apart from, because you know, in Pinewood, all the streets are named after.
Yes.
On streets and stuff. I think there was Broccoli Way or Cubby Way or something. I can't remember. But none of that was really there. They hadn't built, or they just built the soundstage, I think, you know, for the Bond soundstage there. The thing we bought, I mean, I remember being in Cadiz, and this is the whole thing about Bond, and this is, I've told everybody this. Barbara Broccoli is probably the greatest producer I've ever worked for.
Right.
Because I remember being in my little trailer, knocking the door, this good looking lady was standing outside my door. Oh, yeah. And she went, yeah, hey, Ian, do you fancy going for a cup of coffee? Just have a wee chat or whatever. I went, all right, yeah. Didn't have a clue. Didn't know who she was. She knew who I was. And she started speaking, and she knew a little bit about my, you know, very short career at the time. She knew bits about some of the work that I'd done and had seen me in something. I can't remember what it was. My wife might be coming in with a builder, but anyway. She sat me down, had a lovely chat, and then she started speaking about her dad and stuff, and I went,
oh
my God, this is Barbara Broccoli here.
Wow.
You know? And I realised that she makes a point of anybody who's starting their career, or at the top or bottom of their career, it doesn't matter, she treats everybody exactly the same. And she came to see me in Black. I did a very famous Scottish play called Black Watch, about the Black Watch, National Theatre of Scotland. She came to see me in New York. She's come to see me a couple of times. I did a film with Jason Connery.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
A golf movie. There's a funny story about that. She came to see me. She came to see meet up with him, and we watched the film that I did. Very supportive of a lot of young actors. In fact, there's a young actor in that play that, I don't know if I should say this. Yeah, we'll say this. Very good friend of mine, who I think, and I've said it for years, if it had been 5 years ago, I'd have asked you to put a wee bet on Jack Loudon.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
She's met him. He won the Ian Charleston Award as the best up and coming young actor. And then he did Chariots of Fire, which Barbara Broccoli produced.
Of course, yeah.
And yeah, I would say he's maybe slightly too young, not this Bond, but a couple of Bonds down the line, I would say he's a definite.
Well, they're talking about the next Bond being the '30s. So
yeah. Oh really?
Yeah, it's a chance, isn't there? I think.
How old's Jack? I don't know. Jack would be 29, maybe 28.
Oh, that sounds the perfect age. Yeah.
Because they want someone who can be Bond for quite a long time, don't they? And he could do that, couldn't he?
Yeah. Whether he would do it, I don't know. I mean, he's already got a lot of awards, Jack, and you know, his partner's Saoirse Ronan, you know that? You know,
she's not a bad actor, is she?
Yeah, she's all right, you know.
She's all right.
She's done all right for herself.
She's up and coming, you know. Yeah. I've watched a couple of her short films. But so she's always, she's that way. The point of that being is that she met Jack in New York in the play. It was his first ever job. She was aware of all the young actors in this play because it is a play that's won more awards off in Broadway and around the world than practically any other play. She's really just, she keeps an eye on the new talent coming in. Mm. She's always done that, you know. Just, and the whole thing with it, with the Bond movie is that all the crew, all their grandfathers and uncles have all done many, many movies. And then the family comes in and, oh, my son wants to be a chippy and he'll come on set and help. So it's a big family thing. They invite your family out. You can take your family with you, you know, for the shoot if you're an actor. They can bring their family out. It's quite although it's a big, it's a very quick process, Bond. It's not a long, long film shoot. I was really surprised. It's all done in about 4 months, I think, you know.
Mm.
4 or 5 months, or it was at a time. But yeah, everybody on it has been there for years, you know, so there's a real family atmosphere, which probably, A, gets the work done quicker. Everybody knows what they're doing.
Mm.
It's just a great experience, you know.
Oh.
A great experience to be involved in.
So was Barbara, was she there? Did you have to audition for the part?
Got to audition, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Still auditioning, you know.
Of course, yeah.
It's nothing wrong with that. In fact, you meet a lot of actors who don't audition nowadays and they wish they could, you know, because it kind of keeps your eye on. There's some things that don't, you know, but some things I do. But yeah, she wasn't there for the audition. She would have watched it. She would have watched it. Or it was that you go into the casting director, then they send your tape off and, you know.
Mm.
That's the way it went. It was the day after, as I say. So it was obviously quite
an instant
decision. I thought, oh my God, he must be South African with that amazing.
Hey everyone, this is Russell Harnden III. I'm the editor on the 4 Pierce Brosnan Bond movies, and welcome to Really 007.
Ian, can I ask about, you said there was a few extra scenes, 4 or 5 initially, about Mr. Krug. Could you like just possibly give us an insight into what some of those scenes that were cut were about?
There weren't anything integral to the story, really. So there would have been the bedroom scene with him when he knocks me out on the bed.
Yeah.
And a nice little Bond girl.
Yeah.
Bed. Then there was one in the cafe with the Bond girl sitting on my knee, which was nice. There would have been, I think there was one other scene. Oh, I kept waking it up, that's what it was, as he's wheeling me through on the wheelchair.
Yeah, yeah.
I kept waking it up and he keeps knocking me out. It was quite funny.
Oh,
yeah. Right. I think that's what it was. I kept waking up and there was either one or two scenes where he would just keep knocking me out.
That'd have been great.
yeah. Yeah, but it happens. I mean, I've just done a thing just now called The English, which is on.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah,
I was in 3 episodes of that, 10 scenes with everybody in it, and it ends up just a scene and a half left. You know, they cut a whole hour from that because instead of being an hour long, the BBC wanted it 50 minutes. And it's probably helped the story, really. I was an old, well, anyway, I'm not going to go into that, but it happens so much, you know, getting cut. Mm. You're never in control as an actor of what the final edit's going to be, you know. You're never, ever sure. I mean, well, luckily we had Lee Tamahori, who's kind of like an independent filmmaker on Bond. So he did bring a rawness to it, I thought. All that stuff at the beginning when he's getting beaten up and his head all that. There was a real earthy quality to that.
Yeah.
Wasn't so sure about the invisible car.
I wanted to ask you. Sometimes Dying of the Day is a bit derided because people just say, oh, is that the one with the invisible car?
Yeah.
You forget all the other stuff. Like you've mentioned the torch scene, which was before the Casino Royale one. You know, it's quite pioneering.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... And the scene that you're in, that sort of you precede, is one of the most notorious scenes with Halle Berry comes out of the water, and they have that
Doctor No, is it
sexual chat, don't they?
Yeah.
So they're kind of replicating. Was it Ursula Andress?
Yeah.
They're just replicating that, you know, having an Oscar-winning actress coming out of the water and different ethnicity and all that. I thought it was brilliant. It was magic, that, you know. They have the wee chat about all these people. Yeah, it was great.
Ornithology.
Yeah. That was really good. That was all that stuff was great. I thought the body was good.
Terry Stevens, yeah.
Yeah, and then the guy with the diamonds. And
Zhao.
Yeah.
He was great. All that stuff was really good. The only thing that lets me down with the film was the him surfing in. Because they had, if I remember rightly, there's a certain wave in Australia. I think it was in Australia that the biggest wave comes in at some point, and they had guys, there was 3 guys, you see a long shot, 3 guys coming in.
Yeah.
That's real. They waited for this time of year to be shot to film this 3 guys surfing in the biggest wave in the world that hits Australia every at a certain point. Then they cut to this naff CGI. Yeah. Shot of him coming in and he's windsurfer. But, you know, it's still Bond. It's still, like, funny. And, you know, but it just... That's the only thing for me that kind of... The invisible car. I mean, there's been a lot of stupid stuff in Bond films.
Really. Yeah. We've had underwater cars, so it's not that much different, is it?
But, yeah, I mean, that film has got... I mean, they've got Madonna doing the theme tune, I think. A really cool sword fight with Roger.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's great, you know. And she's great in it as well.
That was her first film ever.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I think, and there's a guy I actually work with. I've got another connection. There's a guy that when I was at Phantom, I was covering the Phantom and I was playing Bouquet. And there's a guy called Peter Scudamore.
Ooh, that rings a bell.
Yeah, who's, I think, there's a reporter or something.
Right.
He's done a Bond. It was really weird because we'd both played the same part in Phantom and then both were in the same film. They were both in the same film, I think. And he's done lots of stuff, Peter. Lots and lots of stuff. I think he's kind of looks as though he could be from, I would say, oh, I don't know, kind of Kazakhstanian looking or whatever.
Yeah. You know.
Fantastic. There's a lot of Arabs. But he does a lot of work. And I took over from him and Phantom and he'd left. And then I think we were both in Die Another Day, which is a wee bit of information for you, you know?
No, while I remember, Ian, please can you tell me whether you had a mojito with Pierce Brosnan?
I can't remember. I don't think they would be real, is it? You know, I mean, offset, off camera, you mean?
Either, yeah. Yeah. The famous mojito scene.
Mojito.
Mojito.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long time ago. I tell you what I did do. My kids, of course, wanted to get James Bond's picture and signature.
Hmm.
I hate doing that.
Especially
when I arrived on set and literally for an hour out of his time, after he'd finished filming, what he'd do, he would sign photographs for all the fans.
Yeah.
Part of his contract, I think. But he did it with such grace and warmth. But I was watching him doing it and I was like, fuck. I said, I've got to ask him for another signed autograph. Like, no, I don't want to do this. And I'm rubbish at it. And I waited to the very, very last day and I was literally coming out the trailer and he came out of his trailer. And I says, Pierce, can I ask a favour? He says, yeah, of course, anything, you know. I says, can I...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Can I get a wee picture for you for my kids and a wee set of autograph? Grab me, because he's really tall. And I've got the picture at home. Mark said it's not here, it's at home. Might send you a me and him. I think I'm standing in a wall because I'm 5'10 and a half, but he's 6 foot something, you know.
Yeah.
I'm standing there with him. And he says, please, please don't ever. He says, I'm honored to be working with you. He says, I'm just the same as you. We're just actors. He says, I've got maybe some more lines than you, but we're just doing the same job. Please don't ever feel. He says, I'm proud to be working with you. He was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, brilliant. And he says, never forget that, you know. He says, I've got my stories of how he worked hard for a long time. Nothing was happening for him to get roles, you know. Him and his wife, he remember telling me a story, him and his wife, and they had sold their house or had just taken $3,000 to go to LA and all, and he went, sod it, let's just get a house on the beach. Let's get this house on the beach for a couple of months. Just blow our money, and if anything comes off, well and good. If not, you know, we've had a good time. And he got Remington Steel.
Oh,
yeah. He just landed it. But he's got this whole really laid back way about him. And it's the same. And he's as I say, he's, I think, the Scottish and the Irish, and we've got this, whatever, you know. It's fine. It'll be fine. Attitude. And he definitely has never left him. And he was so nice to me on that. He really was. You know, it's a lasting memory. It's like it was yesterday, to be honest, you know.
So good.
I know I'm literally rabbit.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing.
We interviewed Götz Otto, who's a German actor who was stamped the henchman in Tomorrow Never Dies. And he was just, Pierce is just the greatest guy ever. You know, they went on nights out because I think they were filming in Hamburg.
Oh, right.
He had a flat that he he was staying in. And so basically, he just got everybody to come after each day's shooting. They had parties there, but he was like, I can't tell you about what happened at those parties.
Well, he did try to get me into playing backgammon. He's a big backgammon.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And it's kind of like a Bond thing.
Yeah.
And you arrive on set and he was there. He said, do you play? I went, no, not really. So he started teaching me how to play backgammon. You know, so when we were in the filming, we could have a game, which I tried to, I had a bit of hammering a I wasn't really a big backgammon player. But no, I wasn't really. I mean, it's 3 weeks, was when I think about it. It's quite a long time filming, you know. I could do a whole film in 3 weeks normally and play a big role in a film, and sometimes we can do it in 3 weeks. But yeah, he was, because it was on location and he was in every single day, I think, I didn't get a chance to go out with him, which if I ever meet him again, I will, you know. Plus, I was quite young. I was 20, I was 29, 30, but it was all new to me filming, you know. So I was a little bit kind of wide-eyed and, you know, but yeah, I'd be a bit different now, you know.
I mean, to be fair, Ian, your story is such an inspiration. Yeah, in terms of for a long time not knowing what to do and then just taking this step of something, and within a few years you're on a Bond film, living the dream. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky, but I do say to kids and anybody, there's no right or wrong in our business.
Mm.
So you can go to drama school. Bill Nye puts it perfectly about drama school. You can go to drama school. You desperately, if you can, take something from it. But you have to realise that these teachers who are at drama school with you have to talk for 8 hours a day for 3 years on the subject of acting.
Mm.
But it's not that much to talk about, really. Learn your lines, go on. And, you know, it's, you can think too much about things. And it's the same with rules and regulations about you must do this and you must do that to try and get on. And there's not. Do what you... Look at your strengths that you have. 60% of the business is keep trying, picking yourself up, you know. And even now, I mean, you know, it's been a quiet couple of months for me since the last thing I did, you know, so I'm still itching again, thinking, right, okay, let's do a little bit of pushing out and seeing what's out there. And this, that's part of it, you know, not just sitting by the phone thinking something's going to happen, you know. And I didn't have any... Well, you know, when I say to people what I did to get my agent and walking in there and getting her to phone a casting director, they're like, what? Really? I went, yeah. And I says, and the next minute I was in Jessica Superstar. Mm-hmm. They were like, that's unbelievable. And it is a good story, but you don't have to go to drama school. You don't have to have money. I didn't have the money to go to drama school, really. Or I didn't have the time. I was 29 when I started. It's quite old. I'd had life experience. And I'd done amateur stuff. So, you know, I took things that I'd learned in life. And a stage is a stage. You know, just whether it's a stage in the West End or a stage in Aberdeen or a stage at the local church, a stage is a stage. If you can project and people watch you and you can perform and people go, oh, you're really good. You know, acting's all about confidence. All about confidence. There's nothing worse than not feeling confident on a set or on stage about what you're doing, or a director that keeps putting you down. No, good directors will say, right, okay, that was great. Maybe try it this way.
Yeah.
Never say, that was rubbish, mate. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Do this. Because you just go, ooh, and you tense up, you know? So for me, I mean, working with people like Pierce Brosnan and Samantha Bond and Judi Dench and few names, but I've got a great Matt Damon story. I did The Last Duel with him.
Yeah.
2 years it would have been. That was just before just before COVID. We'd never heard about COVID, and I was in. And I'm a huge Matt Damon fan. I had all my scenes with him, and three scenes with Jodie Cromer in The Last Duel. Again, it's quite a small part, but it's a lovely part. Ridley Scott directing. Everybody was telling me, know your lines, because he shoots with 6 cameras. You get 3 takes at it.
Oh,
no,
right.
Yeah, it's very fast. Bump, bump, bump. I arrived on set and there he is, Matt walking around. And I remember speaking to his manager and I says, look, I started talking about some obscure Matt Damon films that not many people know about. And he's like, yeah, I am actually. You know, I'm a bit nervous about meeting him and, you know. And I'd already done a tiny scene in the morning because I play the stable hand in the film. And he came in and he was shouting and screaming. Excuse me, and I was brushing the horse. But before we did the scene, I think he just thought I was one of the crew, you know. he thought I was maybe one of the extras or something. He didn't introduce himself, and I was like, oh, God, he thinks I'm a bloody extra, you know. he's going to be a bit of a wall in, he's not going to say hello and this, that, and the other. Oh, my God. Well, after lunch, when we were about to do my first scene with Jodie, just me and her, standing there, centering myself, getting ready, tapping the shoulder, hey, it's Matt, how you doing? I said, oh, great, how you doing? He says, any problems with the script? And then you want to talk about it? I says, no. Sphincter's going to enter the desert. Trying to be cool. He says, well, listen, he says, you don't mind if I watch, you know, these little scenes that you've got, they're very close to Ridley's heart, because Ridley Scott wanted to be a jockey. He trained as a jockey. There is, like, he's quite small, you know, and he had an accident, but he loves horses. So he's written these scenes in. It's kind of, you're playing Ridley Scott, really, in the stable hand and stuff.
Ah, nice.
He says, do you mind if I watch? I went, no. So I did my scene. He came running out, gave me this biggest hug. He said, man, that was great.
Love that.
Then for a whole hour afterwards, I'm standing with him and Jodie, just chatting about stuff, what I'm up to. You know that Scorsese had the script before Ridley Scott, and he says, Marty, could they do anything with it? And passed it on to me. And I thought, well, maybe we could do something with this. And I wrote one part of it. And
yeah, they did, didn't they?
The other third of it, and then the lady wrote the lady's point of view from it. Really interesting. And then spoke about boxing, about I did a bit of boxing, and he loves boxing, and I was just like, I'm like, this is mental. And it's the only time in my whole career my missus called, and she knew I was, like, you know, a Matt Damon fan, and she says, how was it then? And I literally almost cried. I was in the back of the car, driving my back to the hotel. I says, that's one of the best days I've ever had, ever on set.
Wow.
I said, it's just, he doesn't have to do that with his actors. He knows everybody's name, knows all the crew's name. He's from Chicago, again, a bit like Scots and the Irish. And he's from a city. He's just a bloke, you know. And this is what we've got from, you know. But everyone's got their idols, so everyone's nervous. I mean, I remember Pacino speaking about being really, really nervous, meeting Marlon Brando for the first time in The Godfather. It's just what you do. You feel nervous. You want to do your best. You want to be good. It's, in the odd occasion, you'll meet somebody you really look up to, and they'll let you down a little bit. But oh my God, Pierce Brosnan, and especially Matt Damon for me anyway, I had the best time ever meeting them and working with them and seeing how they work, how just normal they are. And probably because they're normal, it's probably helped them get to where they are, because they're very, very likable. They can speak to anybody, you know. And that's a big thing in our business. You know, don't be a Wally, you know. And just let it do your job. I was going to swear there, but don't be a, you know, don't, just try and be nice, you know. It gets you a long way. It gets you a long way, you know. And as I say, that's probably one of the reasons why Pierce Brosnan's got where he is, apart from being a lovely man, really good looking, a lovely actor, a really good looking man. He's a really, really nice guy.
Mm.
You want to work for him. You want to do your best when you're there with him, you know. So it's all about. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Not bad from a well Duffy Aberdeen, you know.
Yeah.
So amazing.
There's a guy called Sean, wasn't there, who did all right from Scotland in the Bond.
Yeah, he was all right. Yeah. He was all right. Well, Jason.
Jason.
I auditioned for, we did a film, a golfing movie about the history of golf in Scotland. And I auditioned for him in London. Hey, how you doing? I said, oh, I'm all right. Yeah. He says, auditioned, did my lines and stuff, when I met him and stuff. He says, do you play golf, by the way? I says, yeah, I play off 9. Went, oh, brilliant. Oh, great. Never thought much about it. Went all the way to St. Andrews. Did a bit of prep beforehand. I was playing Willie Park, the first winner of the Open, Peter Mullen and Jack Loudon. I've worked with Jack and Peter now 2 or 3 times. Jason comes up, lovely, lovely guy, really nice guy. He says, do you fancy a wee game? I says, what? He says, golf. I said, I play golf. He went, what? You're off 9? I says, yeah, but I mean, actors say they'll ride a horse, but they can't. He went, shit, man. He says, you're doing all the golf stuff in it. He says, you need to. So he rushed me to the golf pro. I called Mr. Golf, funny enough, in St. Andrews, the golf pro there. 3 days chipping out of bunkers and doing all this. My missus phoned me, where are you? I said, I'm in a bunker. And I'm chipping out a bunker here. Loving it. Hooked on golf now. A playoff 16. 4 or 5 years ago, we filled it. Playoff 60. I love it. I love it.
Oh, brilliant.
Fantastic.
But, yeah, that's the thing. He says, what? He says, tell that story wherever he goes. Jason, lovely, lovely guy. Oh. Really, again, really down to earth. Really. Yeah, he trained as an actor. His old man sent him to Perth Rep. He says, right, if you want to be an actor, he says, here's a little bit of pocket money. That was, you know, notoriously stingy Sean Connery anyway. A little bit of pocket money, sent him to Perth Rep, got his trade there. I was at Perth Rep, did all the rep stuff for a whole year, you know.
Yeah.
On no money, living in a tiny, you know, room with all the other actors. And he says, right, this is what you have to do, you know. And he's just down to earth, lovely, lovely guy.
Really. Oh.
That's great to hear. Of course, Sean, didn't he only get into golf because of filming Goldfinger? And then he became absolutely obsessed with it.
He's obsessed with it. Like, wherever he went to film, in his contract, he had to be within a mile or 3 miles of a golf course or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked with an actor called Tony Curran. Do you know Tony? Tony Curran? He was in it was a Sean Connery film. It was kind of like a superhero film. Long title. I can't remember what it was now.
Leave It to Ronnie Jensen.
Yeah. Tony's the Invisible Man or something.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
And he was a big Connery fan. And I remember Tony was saying, he took met his mum. His mum met Connery, and Connery had a dance with her and stuff. And the Connery says to him, he says, oh, let's play around the golf, you know, or whatever. And Tony's a good golfer. They teed off in one hole. Tony hit a butte, and then Connery comes up and he hits a butte. And Tony thought his ball had went longer than Sean's, you know. Tony gets to his ball and he's a way to play it. And he goes, boy, boy. He says, what? She's boy, no. And Tony says, that's my ball. And Connery went down, picked up the ball and went, it's my ball. And it had 7 written on it.
Oh yes.
My ball. He's got 007 written on his ball.
Oh, brilliant.
Class.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
Class.
This is Guts Otto, a.k.a. Mr. Stemper from Tomorrow Never Dies. You're listening to Really 007. Have fun. I owe you an unpleasant death, Mr. Bond.
You mentioned Judi Dench as well. Got to ask a bit about her.
Yeah, I've worked with her 3 times, funny enough. What we are, by another day, I did The Merry Wives of Windsor with her, the musical at the RSC. And also, when I was in Les Mis, the third time I worked with her, she was doing a play next door. And she was in the second half of the play, and there was a period of an hour when she actually wasn't in the play. And she'd always wanted to be in Les Mis. So they brought her next door in the hour that she wasn't being used. They dressed her up as Smelter Woman.
Oh,
and around the smelter, she put a wee thing on, and she did this whole thing when she was on stage with the cast singing away. Had to get a wee rehearsal with her. I remember one of the cast went, who's this lady? She thought she'd won a competition or something. She didn't realize it was Judi Dench. Who's this lady? She won a raffle or something, you know? It's Judi Dench, I haven't seen. Anyway, yeah. So that was the third time I worked with her. She's magic. You've seen documentaries, but she's just a laugh, you know. She likes a laugh on stage. She's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Really wonderful. But she bought, I was getting divorced at the time, and my kids came up. It's like I've had loads of divorces. It was just a butt boy. Remarried again. Anyway, that's besides the point. But the kids were with me for one pre-Christmas show, Merry Wives of Windsor at the RSC. And she found out the kids were coming, and we were all doing Secret Santa. And my kids had been sitting there. They had to come in and watch us all get a wee present. And then 2 big presents were left. And Judi Dench had found out my kids were coming to watch the show and bought them a present. She's magic. She's lovely as well. Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, the way I've been speaking of all these people, but they're all part of this. I suppose all part of the Bond family. And when I say that everyone involved in Bond it does seem like a family when you get on set. Maybe half the casting process is just getting these people that are just normal, you know, who can do the job, you know. And because I mentioned all these people that have, you know, that have I've talked about, and not mean to make name drop, but there's been a connection in my life with James Bond. Now, I didn't even realise it, but there is. Some sort of all these people I've worked with have all been connected to Die Another Day and the jobs that I've been doing. It's all weird, but they're all been lovely people. So maybe that's part of the process. Maybe that's part of the casting process.
Mm.
Oh, the next Bond, just make sure he's a nice guy and he's not a dick, you know?
Yeah.
To be honest.
Oh, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the last thing you want. You don't want somebody who's got a... It's a bit like, you know, Ronaldo and Manchester United. There's the club. There's nobody's bigger than the club, you know? Yeah. And I don't think there's anybody bigger than the Bond empire, you know, the Bond.
So
Bond,
true.
Bond. There's nobody bigger.
So true.
It must be difficult for, like, when you're with Pierce, because he's got the whole franchise on his back, hasn't he? It's like,
yeah,
every scene he's in, I've got to get this perfect because it's part of history, isn't it? And he's
I mean, I'm a jobbing actor and I still class myself as a jobbing actor. And that means I go from job to job and I do this job. You know, Matt Damon's and Pierce Brosnan's and the world, they're jobbing movie stars.
Yeah.
Mm.
They're jobbing movie. They go from picture to picture to picture. And it becomes, after a while, although Bond was his big thing, you know, his big thing, he was James Bond, but he'd done stuff before that, it becomes, there is a bit of pressure on him, I imagine, but what these big actors try and do is make it as normal as possible and just try and be the best they can at their job, you know?
Mm.
All the rest of the stuff that comes with it normally comes after the gig anyway.
Yeah.
All the publicity and how they carry themselves, you know, on screen, if they're nice and everybody likes them and they do their job for that short period of 4 or 5 months or whatever, it's what they're really about. All the rest of the stuff is all the bollocks, to be honest, you know, all the publicity and this and all that. You know, it's just, it's a necessity. Sometimes you have to do these things, you know.
Mm.
But I think by that time, and it wasn't his first film, it was his last Bond.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
I don't think he knew that at the time, but he was well
in the groove by the time
I know where you are.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah, it was great.
Ian, do you like still have recognition, you know, in the Bond universe? As in, do you get asked to events? Do you get asked to do fan stuff, that kind of thing?
Do you know what? I could go to a lot of these things. I mean, this is the second Bond thing I've ever done in my life.
Oh, wow.
I went to one once. Somebody had asked me to do a Bond convention. Well, it was a sci-fi convention for things, and because I'd done Bond, I literally went to this place. It was in Blackpool. Oh, I hadn't been to Blackpool for years, so we went to Blackpool. Me and my missus together, up in a hotel, and had a nice weekend in Blackpool. You know, I used to go as a kid, so let's go to Blackpool. But I walked in there, and there was tons of Bond fans lining up. Because no one had ever got my autograph.
Wow.
I'd never done one. I wouldn't do one again, actually, not for a long time, only because a lot of the people in there was the cast of Hello, Hello. You know, Melvin Hayes going, I went for Quiet One to Die, dear. And all they do now, and I felt like this is what am I doing here? What am I doing here? And it feels though my career's ending. Why am I here? You know, there was Oliver. From the original Oliver film.
Oh,
he was about 40, he was about 50. Mark Lester, he was about 50, and he does them all the time. So there's a whole circuit of that sort of stuff. And I'm not, you know, I can chat away and all that, but I don't really, although I do a lot of work, I mean, in the business, everyone knows me, but I don't really do that much publicity. I'm not up on the Twitter or Instagram, really, that.
Yeah.
I do it, you know. But I'm not one for promoting myself too much, you know. Maybe I should a little bit more. And it was nice because there was literally people, and I felt really bad. You had to charge them for your whatever it was, for a signature and a photograph and this, that, and the other. But they were buying like 20 signatures and photographs or whatever. And you had to charge them for every single one. And so I was like, you have 10 free, you know. I felt really bad, you know. But I was coming up saying, no! What are you doing? That's why you make your money. But I was like, oh God, you know. One guy had travelled down from Inverness with his wife, because she came in a big fur coat. I remember that. He was suited and booted to the nines, had his own business. You know, they were like, you know, he was It's like he says, oh, I've never seen you here before. And we're to come to these all the time. We're big Bond fans, and which is lovely. It's great, you know. But I kind of try to be a little bit more. I don't want to be on you because it's 20 years ago now. It's lovely to have the memories. And like, this is the first time I've chatted about Bond in 20 years.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yeah.
It's nice to do. But I think if you do it all the time and if you're always chatting about something you did 20 years ago, you know, it's kind of, and that's all you've got to. You've got to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of think, well, you know, I'm still got my career and I'm doing well. I'm doing lots of stuff. And so, yeah, you kind of move on a little bit, but I'll never forget it. Never forget it.
So good.
What did you think when you got that script with the, I mean, it's just, it's such a funny little scene, isn't it?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was great. You know, I mean, literally, it was all I'd done was theatre. I'd done two musicals by that time, two or three musicals, and it was one of the first. Apart from, I did a bill.
Oh right,
everyone's done a bill. I was terrible. It was shocking. I said, oh, I need to get this. I played a drug dealer or something. I was so over the top. It was terrible. No one gets to see it. I'm like, no, please never show anybody that.
I love the bill.
Yeah, I know. I love that guy here in Tenby. He's the guy who works at one of the building supply companies that, you know, if we're doing work in the house or whatever. He always comes out and he's a massive. He's watched every single bill.
Yeah,
yeah. We're on telly last night. I said, what was it? He went to Bill. I went to Bill. We did his theatre and drama. It comes out here. Because I was in it about 10 times playing as DI or whatever.
Right.
But no, I was in it because I did it a few times, but the first time ever I was playing a baddie. Then I was a copper many years later.
Yeah.
Then a copper. He's like, oh, I says, oh mate, don't tell anybody you've seen me doing that. It's shocking. Shockingly bad, you know. Yeah.
So good.
That was the first ever job. First ever telly job. And I did some other class. I'm very proud. I did 6 episodes of Grange Hill.
Oh, lovely. Brilliant.
I think it's one of the last ever series of Grange Hill I did, which is kind of, I remember, I've met some of the kids since. One of them's an actor now. Me and my missus did a gangster flick called Who Needs Enemies, which we made for no money. Right. Absolutely, a real independent, a micro-budget film. And this was, and one of the leads in it was a kid. I was one of the leads. And this young kid, he says, do you remember me? I went, no. He says, I was that kid in Grange Hill many years ago. I was like, Jesus. And then they changed, really. I went, oh, how you doing? Yep. But that was great, you know. Mrs. McCluskey was still there. And, you know, it's magic, you know. So, again, they're just memories, really. It's just great. And I have got a couple of, as I say, I'm not really one for keeping memorabilia either. But I kept a couple of Bond things, you know, the little car and my picture with Pierce.
Yeah.
I've got something else. I've got a couple of other little things, little mementos for films, but I don't really, I just kind of keep it all up here, you know.
Someone
wants to know and chat about it, then I'll hear we chat, I don't mind.
Well, we really appreciate you speaking to us about it. It's just the stories are so great, honestly.
Because I was going to ask you, I presumed either you or Lee Tamahori was like, should we do him South African? But he was South African in the script.
I was South African in the script, yeah.
Such an interesting decision, you know.
Yeah.
Can we be really cheeky and ask you to do one of your lines in the South African voice for us, please?
Oh, yes, please.
Stand up some girls and take them to room 42 unless you want to be known as Fidel Castrato.
Oh!
Something like that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, Ian.
Well,
that must have been fun to film.
Some Australians going, that's Australian, that. It's not South African. That was the last time I did a South African accent, and this is 20 years later. I'm anyway.
Keep it on the CV, you can still do it.
I've just finished doing something called The Gold about the Brinks Matt Bullion robbery, and all my scenes were with Hugh Bonneville, and I'm playing a Swiss police officer and that. So I had to do a Swiss-German accent and then speak fluent German for a whole scene. So I don't speak German, so I had to learn it all phonetically. So that was a bit of a challenge, you know. Yeah, so it's quite nice to be able to do these voices every now and again, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You don't know whether you can do them or not until you try. And that was a big challenge because. Yeah, to the as for knowing the lower vohin, this is geflossen is to learn the whole sort of passage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and get a wee German dialect coach to go through all the stuff. But we of course we born with the South African thing. You know, I just thought, oh, give it a go. You know, which is I mean, fortunately we Scottish actors, they all have quite a good ear for accents because we've got so much especially German, of course.
Yeah.
But accents that German and South African. German, South African, and Dutch. There's a lot of similarities and crossovers with the voice, with certain words and stuff, and inflections. It's really interesting that you find. So when you do German, you can think, oh, right, you know, that sounds a little bit this, that sounds a little bit like that. But yeah, there's all crossovers, you know. It's the same way, like my accent, I'm from Aberdeen in Scotland, and I say, well, we've got a whole thing called the Doric language in Aberdeen. So we say things like, fit like, who's your dudes? I pick an eye. So why we speak up there again? We speak like this. And it's all Viking. It's all yeah, Nordic. Yeah. Words. Fit like in Swedish is hello. And we say fit like in Aberdeen. Fit like in Aberdeen. You know, there's a whole, I love languages. I love where they come from. And we speak very fast in Aberdeen because it's a bloody cold, you know. South America or Southern American accent is all quite slow and droll because it's warm and hot and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the South African's a bit like that as well, I suppose, really.
Daniel Craig's been doing a lot of Southern American accents recently.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, on the Benoit Blanc, you know. That.
Yeah. I saw the first one. The second one. Yeah.
What do you think of Daniel Craig as James Bond?
He's great. I think he's great, actually. I think it's very unfair to compare the Bonds because the first is like anybody who creates a part, you know, Sean Connery in a lot of people's minds is the original and the best.
Yeah.
Mm.
But because Bond, I mean, Bond has just died, you know, and his last.
All right, we're going to ask you, have seen
died. but it's something that can be recreated all the time. So they're now going to go for a younger Bond. Whether they do a younger Bond in present day, which it probably will be.
Mm.
Want to be reverting back to Bond of the 1960s, you know, because a lot of the stuff there, and they might go that way. They might go, let's do a Bond and start him again and start him in 1960. And they might, but I very much doubt it. However, he's getting PC and you can't say this and you can't say that. And I'm sure it's going to be an up-to-date version.
Yeah.
To be honest, when Bourne came out, I think that's when they went, we need to up our game and make this a bit more, you know, a bit more now rather than, you know, as something that was, which they spoke about a lot, an antiquated, misogynist, you know, character that Bourne was, you know, which in a lot of blokes love when the books and stuff, it's the way it was written. But even like in Bourne, if you read the Bourne books, well, Jason Bourne is well in his late 40s. And there's nothing to do with phones and computers in the Bourne books. It's all set at a period of time where he's kind of figure things out himself, and it's not just, you know, all computer wizardry. And you know, they totally updated the Bourne movies. In my opinion, better the Bourne movies are fantastic. The books are great standalone pieces, but so I think they had to do that with Bourne, you know. I think they bring it into the 21st century, so I'm sure it's going to be a. And it's really weird with Bond because he'll be 30 again. He'll be in these early
30s. Yeah.
Hey, we don't care.
No, you know? We enjoy it.
Yeah, we enjoy it. That's what's all.
But Dying of the Day really is the last of the sort of more normal, fun Bonds, isn't it? So it's part of history for that reason as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it is part of history. I like to look at that. It's
too right.
It is what it is. They are what they are, and they're standalone, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, definitely. I mean, like Fawlty Towers, you listen to Fawlty Towers. Fawlty Towers, for me, is still one of the best sitcoms. But when you look at some of the language used in Fawlty Towers,
you can't.
But you can't criticise it because it's a bit of history, it's a bit of social history. Yeah. It's still fantastic writing, the humour is fantastic, but you wouldn't be able to say some of the things that John Cleese wrote and He just wouldn't. That's just the way things have progressed. But it's a part of time, it's a part of history, and, you know, it's great to be involved in, you know.
Yeah.
A stereotypical South African called Krug.
He calls it a wheelie chair as well. I love that.
A wheelie chair? I didn't know. Yeah.
I watched it again yesterday and, well, the scenes and wheelie chair. Yeah.
They need a goddamn wheelie chair.
Yeah.
The hell do you want? I don't need a goddamn wheelie chair.
No? You do now. Is this?
Hola?
You got punched by Pierce Brosnan, so that's another claim.
That's it. That's
Yeah, I took that fall. I did that one. I did that stunt.
Oh, good. Crash my...
Amazing. Yeah. That's so good.
I just realised I was getting so relaxed there. You've lost my head.
Oh yeah, no, it's fine.
No, you see, we appreciate it so much.
I just wanted to ask you about, did he have much interaction with Christopher Nolan in The Dark Knight?
That was an unfortunate film for me because it was the writer's strike.
Mm.
Yeah.
The role that I went up for, there was a really lovely scene I had with this big black prisoner. Yeah. Who ended up dying. He died a few years back. But Christopher Nolan ended up writing all that himself because the writers went on strike and they rewrote it, and this is why he writes a lot of stuff now. The writer's strike went on, so they didn't get the license to use the script from The Dark Knight, a lot of it. So he rewrote it himself, you know. So my scene was cut, and I ended up doing nothing in it, really, just standing there with a bloody gun, you know. I actually think I still get some... I still get some from money for that every now and again. I hardly had any interaction with him and that. Same with Scorsese. I was doing Quasimodo in Notre Dame de Paris in London in the West End. I got all the ugly parts.
Yeah.
And they let me off to do Gangs in New York, Scorsese film, one line or two lines or something like I had, you know. And after I'd finished filming that, he asked me to stay on and do another part in the film, looking totally different, saying another couple of lines of one of the... So my claim to fame is I turned Scorsese down. I said, sorry, mate. I'm not allowed. I'm in contract in the West End in London. I'm doing a job in the West End. So I didn't do it. I said no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's kind of nice to be a small part of those little films. I mean, I've got slightly more to do in the Bond film. It's a nice part, you know. It's a lovely character, you know. And out of them all, I mean, you know, to be part of Bond is it's one of the notches ticked, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like doing maybe a Star Wars thing. It would be the next.
That's next. You never know.
Yeah, never know.
And the thing is that like people are going to listen to this, and it's just going to be so great to hear these stories that for you, like you spoke for the first time in 20 years about it, and they're so fresh and so amazing. And you know, Die Another Day, commercially, it was always very successful, but it's had some unfair criticism, and we're really just trying to, you know, celebrate the good things about it. We agree with you about the CGI kite surfing, but. It's one thing at the end of the day.
Of course it is. It's a Bond thing. No one cares.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's arcs there, a little bit of wink and glint in the eye.
Yeah.
Coming down. Especially Pierce Brosnan, who's the smoothest of all Bonds. Oh, you know, I don't think his hair's being not a single bit of his hair moves.
No, yeah.
You know, down there. Can't remember if he's smoking a cigar or something as well, but it's just ridiculously funny, you know. It's like, oh no.
Yeah.
But that's what it's all about, you know.
Yeah. So good.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you was, this is sad. Your character, he's going to that place, Los Organos, to have some kind of, DNA replacement therapy?
he's getting his face changed, if I remember right.
Yeah,
because he's obviously some sort of
creep.
Yeah.
Narco creep, you know. He's some drug dealer who doesn't want to be found.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going there to get his face changed, yeah.
So good.
Brilliant.
So Bond, though, that plot. Only in Bond. You know, it's...
I kind of wish they'd made more of it, stuff, you know, but also good things in the film, you know. It does kind of stand out a little bit, those little scenes. They're quite funny.
They're brilliant.
Yeah, all the stuff in Cuba, I know it's in Cadiz, but that's a real highlight of the film. And you've got David Arnold's music is fantastic as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. That shot where he's driving down the road in that big Cuban car.
Oh.
It's great.
So Bond, isn't it?
Yeah.
We went to there's a band called Cue the Music. They're like a James Bond tribute band, and they had their final show at the West End last year, and they played that Cuban music as an encore piece.
Not far from Tottenham Court Road, is it?
Oh, it must be near. It's the Phantom of the Opera's played.
Where the Phantom's played. Yeah. It was one night.
Phantom's Theatre, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But that Cuban music, it's so
very
good.
Very well loved by Bond fans, all that.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, that's fantastic. Oh, well, listen, have a nice time, lads. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Ian, for your time.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you, Ian.
Take care.
See ya. Bye-bye.
See you later.
And remember, you can hear loads of other interviews from many actors and behind-the-scenes people, including directors and editors and composers from the Bond film series. So check those out on our YouTube channel. They're also available on iTunes and Spotify and on our website, poddojo.com.
Where they know this.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.